Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains April 24th through the 27th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
On June 27, 2004, 30-year-old April Pitzer was last seen in Newberry Springs, California, after telling loved ones she was preparing to come back home to Arkansas. She had been terrified for her life and was desperate to return, but she never made it back. In the months that followed, investigators received a series of strange and unsettling tips, including one involving a written message on a truck stop bathroom wall hundreds of miles away that appeared to reference her disappearance. Investigators eventually determined that April was likely murdered, but more than 20 years later, no one has been charged, and her family is still searching for answers, her remains, and the person or people responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So April Pitzer's case is the ultimate call to action. If there's ever been an investigation that I've covered on this show where I believe multiple people have the information needed to solve this one, it's this case right here. And I may say this a couple times throughout the episode, but when I say that there are people out there that know what happened, they may not have the full story. It may be one piece of information, and then someone else will have another piece of information. But together, in totality, those pieces will paint a picture and allow law enforcement to get answers. And that's why it's a group effort. When I say we need people to come forward, I'm not just looking for one. I'm looking for all of them. A lot of time has passed, and as I get into this investigation, if you haven't heard of this case before, you'll start to understand what I'm talking about based on the circles that April was frequenting. It's a high likelihood that there were many people who were made aware of what happened to April, and once I tell you the background story and I explain my reasoning behind believing that, I think you're going to agree with me. Based on the narcotics world that I lived in for a very long time, what we have here is something that I've seen and heard of before. So I'm going to go over the entire case. We're going to talk about where it stands today. And then I'm going to plead with someone who knows something to come forward, because I do think the answers are out there. We just have to find them. So we have a lot to cover. Let's dive into this week's case. April Beth Pitzer was born on February 19th, 1974 in Arkansas to her mother, Gloria. Those who knew her described her as sweet, funny, loyal, and fun-loving. But when April was 22 years old, she was arrested for driving while intoxicated in Arkansas. Two of her friends in the car were also found with methamphetamine. In exchange for the charges being dropped, April agreed to work as a drug informant for the police and infiltrate a drug ring that ran from Arkansas all the way to California. She was successful, and her cooperation helped lead to dozens of arrests. Afterward, April moved to Fort Worth, Texas, where she met Chase Pitzer. They got married and had two daughters together, Kennedy and Bradley. But while pregnant with their first child, April was summoned back to Arkansas by the DEA to testify as a federal witness against the methamphetamine ring that she had infiltrated years earlier. Her testimony would ultimately lead to the conviction of 32 people. According to her family, that experience deeply affected her. Gloria told the TV show Disappeared that after testifying, April lived in constant fear. April was always looking over her shoulder and terrified someone would retaliate against her. Over time, that paranoia worsened. After the birth of her second daughter, April would not let the girls sleep alone and instead made them sleep in the same room with her. She also openly feared that someone was going to kill her. That fear began taking a toll on her marriage. Chase grew distant, and April turned to drugs and alcohol while her mental health declined. At one point, she suffered a mental breakdown and moved out with the girls, but Chase fought for custody. And after a short battle, he eventually won as April's life continued to spiral out of control. She began spending time with a rough crowd and started dating a man named John. When John said he planned to move back to California, he asked April to come with him. She agreed, believing the move was temporary and also acknowledging that it would give her some space from everything happening back home. So in December of 2003, April and John moved to Barstow, California, a city in the Mojave Desert. The area has limited job opportunities, vast uninhabited land, and a reputation for drugs and crime. And I have a map up on the screen right here that you can see. And as you can tell, there are a few towns along the way, but everything is extremely run down, and it's kind of like the Wild West. And one thing that I wanted to bring up, which I thought was interesting, is that as we're going through these cases, our entire team has access to the scripts and the research. And Shannon, our editor, who I've talked about many times on the show, she's actually traveled the route that we're talking about tonight. And she left a comment weighing in on a description of the area. And instead of putting it into my words, I left it in her words. So for the first time in Detective Perspective history, here's a quote from my editor, Shannon. Shannon says, quote, "Barstow itself has civilization, but is surrounded by nothing. Even from the highway, you can see several ghost towns before and after Barstow in this area. There are popular pull-off spots where people will leave graffiti or skateboard or just run around the abandoned buildings and stuff. You can tell driving by that beyond the gas stations, there's just desert and mountain. It truly does feel like the Wild West / middle of nowhere. Think of a stereotypical American Southwest road trip, and that's what it looks like. It truly is gorgeous, in my opinion, but also daunting at how vast it is because every mountain you round or drive over, it's just more and more desert." So in April of 2004, April met a man at a party who said that she could stay on his property in Newberry Springs, another Mojave Desert town. John warned her it was a bad idea, but April went anyway. The property was exactly what he feared, filled with drug dealers and criminals, with dilapidated trailers and no electricity. Eventually, John and April broke up, and April started dating the property owner. But no matter how bad things got, April didn't tell her mom. Instead, she said she was working and doing fine. Then about 3 months later, things with her new boyfriend fell apart, and April had nowhere to go. She became homeless and started staying wherever she could, sometimes in shelters, sometimes with anyone who would allow her to crash at their place. After a few months of that, April finally told her mother the truth. She was desperate for help, hungry, and staying in dangerous situations, and she didn't want to do it anymore. April told Gloria that she wanted to come home, and Gloria immediately began making arrangements for her return and mailed her two boxes of clothing just to get her through. While waiting to leave, April stayed with a man named Steve Wilkinson. He lived near the trailer property and had a known history with drugs. One person described Steve as, quote, "a shady character with a lot of bad history." You see, Steve had a lot of connections in the drug world, including to some of the people that April had helped put away. But at the time, Steve didn't know that she was a former informant. Regardless, this was not a good situation for April to be in, and things were about to get a lot worse. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Today's episode is brought to you by Square, the business toolkit that helps you sell, manage, and grow without the chaos. Whether you're just getting started or already running something great, Square gives you the tools to take payments, track sales, manage your team, and keep everything organized all in one place. And right now, listeners and viewers can get $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/detective. That's square.com/go/detective. Visit Square to get started because the right tools make all the difference. And listen, this isn't just an ad. I've been using Square for years. In fact, if you've been to CrimeCon or you're coming this year, you will see that that's all we use. We use Square on our iPads and on our phones, and we also have the Square card reader. And it has made our life extremely easy because we can travel and we can make sales on the go. You can take payments, you can manage inventory, you can schedule your team, track reports, all in one connected platform. No switching tabs, no separate logins, just one place for your business to live. It's super easy. I wouldn't have it any other way. Like I said, way before Square became an advertiser here, we've been using them since we've been going to CrimeCon, so over 5 years now. And if you're just starting a business, Square lets you start selling in person or online, from your counter, from your phone, your website, or even through delivery platforms. And as far as the different payment options, it's all available. You can use tap, chip, swipe, Apple Pay, invoices, all through one system. Square helps you run your business with confidence, clarity, and less chaos. And now it's easier than ever to get started. So why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/detective. That's square.com/go/detective. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. Okay, we're back. And on June 22nd, April called Gloria in a panic. She had run into the wife of one of the men she had helped put away in Arkansas, and the encounter terrified her. April could not believe that someone connected to that case seemingly found her more than 1,500 miles from home. According to those at the party, April immediately began apologizing to the woman, and Steve Wilkinson later told Disappeared that April's reaction made it obvious to everyone there that she had in fact been a confidential informant. It did not take long for people, including Steve, to piece together that she was the woman who helped bring down the drug ring that sent 32 people to prison. After leaving the party, April called Gloria in a panic and told her what had happened. She was terrified, and she wanted to come home immediately. Gloria told her that she would buy her a bus ticket, but explained that she was in the middle of moving from Texas back to Arkansas and could not meet her there for a few days. But April did not want to return home without her mom there. So she told Gloria that once she was settled in Arkansas, to call her and she would head home. Gloria agreed and told her daughter to go somewhere safe in the meantime. And April said she could stay with Uncle Chuck, a man who lived in the 3000 block of Caspian Way in Newberry Springs. April said Chuck was known for helping people in the area. So Gloria said, okay, well, go stay with him. April said she would. But after that conversation, Gloria never heard from her daughter again. About a week later, once Gloria had settled into Arkansas, she began trying to reach April, who did not have a working phone and had been calling collect from Chuck's house. But no matter how many times Gloria called, no one answered. Then on July 4th, a friend of April's named Barbara called Gloria to check in. She said that she had been in the hospital and wanted to know if April had made it home safely. Gloria informed her that she had not. Barbara was stunned by this. She said that Chuck had brought April by the house on June 27th so that she could say goodbye before leaving California. April seemed happy and said she was excited about going home. And just a side note here, because I know my first thought when I heard about Barbara was, why wouldn't April go stay with her if they were so close? And from what I've learned, Barbara was an elderly woman and her younger son had found April walking along the highway when April was homeless. And at some point, April came over to the house and Barbara and April became friends. And after that, April would check in on Barbara from time to time just to see how she was doing. But the dynamic wasn't necessarily friend to friend. It was more of just kind of like a caretaker role, I guess, where April would just come over and say hi and have some brief conversations with Barbara. But it wasn't at the level where I guess April felt comfortable asking Barbara to stay at her home. So that was something that I kind of cleared up, because when I first heard it, I thought, well, something's not adding up here. But once figuring out all of that, it made much more sense. Hence the reason why Barbara was in the hospital for a short period of time. But after hearing this information from Barbara, Gloria knew that something was wrong. So she tried to report April missing to the police, but they refused to take the report. They told her that more than likely April was avoiding her husband and children, and Gloria pushed back and said that wasn't true. April had been excited about coming home and reconnecting with her family, but despite her insistence, no report was taken. As I sit here right now doing some research, I was looking at a few different videos. Law enforcement has never really commented on this. I don't know what the reasoning behind them not taking the report was. I can tell you this, it's not justified. They should have taken the report. It's that simple. If a mother comes in there to report her daughter missing and she explains these circumstances and she's been missing for more than 24 hours, you take the report. It's not that complicated. Even if you don't believe she's missing, if for no other reason than to cover your own ass, you take the report. So the fact that they didn't, one of two things happened here. They didn't take the report, or Gloria's lying to us. And based on what I've learned about Gloria, I don't believe that's the case. And when you consider who we're talking about here as the victim, April did have a checkered past. She was going through some tough times. She was hanging around with the wrong people. And if there's one thing that we've learned over the years, there are police officers who will look at the quote unquote victim, the person who's missing, and come to their own assumptions that this was someone who was on a bender, who just didn't want to be responsible for the things around them and was just trying to disappear. And eventually they would turn up. So essentially, they judged the book by its cover and they didn't look into the actual specifics of what was being reported. And I don't know if that made a difference in what happened here, but I sure as hell know it didn't help. And by July 16th, Gloria had had enough with the runaround. So she asked Barbara to report April missing instead. And this time the police agreed to take the report. Was that because Barbara went in there to file the report? Or was it because by this point, the officers realized, oh man, we might have got this one wrong. She should have turned up by now. She should have at least reached out to someone. Yeah, we might have screwed up here. We better take the report. If you're asking me for my opinion, I think it's the latter. And 3 days after filing that report on July 19th, Chuck called Gloria. He said that he had been helping a friend move to Oregon and had no idea anyone was even looking for April. As you might expect, Gloria did not believe him. She asked when was the last time he saw April, and Chuck said it was June 28th. He claimed that he had left for work at around 6 a.m. while April was asleep, and when he returned home at 5 p.m., she was already gone. According to Chuck, April left with a couple changes of clothes and her ID, and he said that she went to stay with another couple for a few nights, but he had not seen her since. And although I'm reporting Gloria's account of how that conversation went, I do want to put out there that during the research process of this case, we did find some sources that suggested Chuck may have told people that he dropped April off at a bus stop. I don't know how true that is. I'm just putting it out there so you have all the information. And according to Gloria, she asked Chuck where the rest of April's belongings were, and Chuck said they were still at his house. In fact, he was currently looking right at her desert boots and gym bag while speaking to her. Gloria asked Chuck to keep everything there because she was coming to California to collect it, and he agreed to do so. After that call, Gloria contacted the lead detective and relayed what Chuck had told her, but when the detective spoke to Chuck directly, he gave a different story. In this version of events, he told the investigator that when he came home from work, both April and everything she owned was gone. And this is an interesting turn of events because it could mean a few things, right? On one hand, it could be something innocent where Chuck's just not a fan of law enforcement. And once he realized that Gloria had contacted the lead detective, he decided to distance himself, not because he was involved, but because he just didn't want to be involved with the cops again. Different culture, the people he's connected to, him having any type of affiliation with law enforcement could be a bad thing. On the other hand, it could be much more nefarious. If he does, in fact, know what happened to April, having a conversation with her mother is one thing. Having a conversation with detectives is another. So to distance himself from the entire thing, he removes any trace of April from his house or his surroundings, hoping that may lead law enforcement to go in a different direction. April's clothing being at Chuck's house may have just been the tip of the iceberg. Unfortunately, we'll never know. So, with no clear indication of where April had went, investigators and Gloria began searching for answers. Flyers were posted throughout the Mojave Desert, and searches were conducted in the surrounding areas. But even with all of that work and all of that effort, there was no sign of April anywhere. Then on September 7th, detectives received a tip from Roseburg, Oregon. A deputy there responded to a call at a Love's truck stop after someone found a suspicious message written on a bathroom wall. The message read, quote, "Want to find a missing girl from Arkansas? I-15, 3 miles east of Barstow." Believing the message might be significant, the deputy collected fingerprints and surveillance footage from the truck stop and then contacted detectives on April's case. Investigators reviewed surveillance footage from the men's restroom covering the period between April's disappearance and the day the message was found. Now, this footage, it spanned months, and it ran 24 hours a day. And apparently, detectives reviewed all of it, but they did not identify anyone connected to April. And I want to expound on that just a little bit, because you're probably sitting there saying, well, the person who wrote that message must have been seen on camera. And I'm sure that multiple screenshots and images were taken from this video surveillance footage. But the reality is, this is a truck stop. And as I mentioned, this is months of footage, 24 hours a day. Imagine how many people use that restroom. Hundreds, if not thousands. So yes, more than likely, one of the people caught on camera is the same person who wrote that message. But unfortunately, there's no way to tell when the message was actually left. So it could be any of them. So the only real practical hope that you have here is that one of the individuals you've already identified, someone like a Chuck, is caught on camera and you're able to say, boom, there's someone we know had a relationship with April. We need to go speak to them. But that didn't happen. So I know it's a little frustrating, but unfortunately, the reality is there's just not much you can do to narrow down the people caught on camera. It's also worth noting that even if they were able to identify the person, there's still a possibility that they have no connection to what actually happened to April. As I mentioned, there were flyers, there were searches going on, so there were other people who were aware of what was transpiring, and it may have been someone just trying to be funny, although I will acknowledge having this message be left in a bathroom stall in Oregon is definitely suspicious. And for that very reason, even though they couldn't identify who wrote it, they also could ignore the possibility that the message was legitimate. So large-scale searches were conducted in the area referenced on the wall. But once again, no evidence was found. However, that didn't mean April wasn't there. You see, just to kind of put it in context, this was a massive area, and they didn't have much guidance on where to search. So it really was a needle in a haystack. But then, just 2 days later, on September 9th, police received another possible lead. A bus employee said a passenger saw April's missing person flyer and mentioned that she knew April and said she was dead and, quote, in a hole somewhere. Surprisingly, investigators were able to track this witness down, but she denied saying anything about a hole. Instead, she said she overheard someone at a party say that April was dead and she had been placed in a mine shaft. At first, that may sound like a huge lead, but San Bernardino County alone has more than 20,000 mines. Without anything more specific, investigators had no realistic way to narrow down that information. So the lead detective, who was a woman, returned to Chuck's house and asked to look around the property for clues, but Chuck refused. So she leaves, and then a few weeks later, a male detective goes back up to Chuck's house, and not only does he allow him inside, he gives him another version of events. This time, he claimed that April met a truck driver who agreed to take her home so that her mother wouldn't have to buy her a bus ticket. And so, according to Chuck, April left her belongings behind because she planned to return in a few weeks to collect them, but she never came back. And throughout this entire time, while investigators are looking into different avenues, Gloria is conducting her own investigation. And one particular location that kept coming up over and over again was called the Red Dog Mine south of Ludlow, roughly 30 miles from Newberry Springs. According to multiple people Gloria spoke with, Chuck and one of his close friends, who went by Dan Dan, frequently went up there to hang out and use drugs. Gloria was told that Dan was not someone people wanted to cross. Detectives attempted to speak with Dan, but he refused to cooperate for quite some time. And when he eventually did talk, he claimed he knew nothing about what happened to April. Back to the Red Dog Mine. In December of 2004, it was searched by investigators, but they found no sign of April. And for a year, the search and investigation continued with little movement. Then, in December of 2005, there was a major development, and we're going to talk about it right after the break. I'm excited to tell you about the world's number one expanding garden hose and their brand new product, the Pocket Hose Ballistic. Look, I do not like taking care of my lawn. I abuse my hose. I drag it all over the asphalt driveway. I tug it this way. I tug it that way. But the Pocket Hose Ballistic handles it all. This hose has changed my landscaping life. It's the toughest pocket hose ever built, reinforced with liquid crystal polymer used in bulletproof vests, something I know a little bit about. It's super lightweight, easy to manage, easy to store, and when you want to use it, you turn the water on, it grows, and then when you turn the water off, it shrinks back down to pocket size. Pretty self-explanatory. It also comes with the pocket pivot, which gives you total freedom of movement at the spigot with 360-degree rotation. You move, it follows, and the water flows. And listen, I'm sure there are some of you saying, Derek, it's just a hose. But the pocket hose carries over 100 patents worldwide. So this isn't your typical hose. And now, for a limited time, when you purchase a new Pocket Hose Ballistic, you'll get a free 360-degree rotating pocket pivot and a free thumb drive nozzle. Just text DETECTIVE to 64000. That's DETECTIVE to 64000 for your two free gifts with your purchase. One more time, text DETECTIVE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. Hey, guess who our next sponsor is? It's one of our regulars here on the show. I'm talking about Smalls. They make fresh, human-grade food for cats. It's made from the same stuff you or I would eat, but formulated specifically to help cats thrive. And we're going to switch it up a bit and play a little game of false or fact, so feel free to play along. The first ingredients in most grocery store cat food is water and corn. That's a fact. Most cat food is filled with water and fillers. That's it. False or fact, some cat food brands use the same meat grade you'd find in a hot dog. That's also a fact. 4D meat from dead, dying, diseased, or disabled animals is technically legal in pet food. Pretty disgusting. False or fact, a bag of cat food labeled natural has zero legal definition behind it. Unfortunately, that's also a fact. Natural is largely unregulated in the pet food industry. Listen, when you think about it, high quality food is an investment in your cat's health. We all know that vet bills can rack up into the thousands of dollars. But the good thing is, with Smalls, it may be able to help offset some of those vet bills. And that's because Smalls is fresh, gently cooked food, and it's made without preservatives. It also helps to create a balanced diet, which leads to less shedding, fewer hairballs, and a more silky shine. And a fun fact about cats, they use protein as their main energy source. So more protein means more fuel and sustained energy. And I'm not the only one who's speaking highly about Smalls. Forbes also ranked Smalls the best overall cat food. So stop serving your little carnivore a bowl of processed shortcuts. For a limited time, because you're a listener or viewer of Detective Perspective, you can get 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/detective. One last time, that's 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/detective. Okay, we're back, and an owner of a mine that was approximately 12 miles away from Red Dog found women's clothing inside a shack and called investigators. Police contacted Gloria, and she flew to California to see whether the items belonged to April. And as soon as Gloria saw them, she recognized several pieces of clothing she had mailed to April before she disappeared. And since she was already in the area, Gloria also decided to go to the Red Dog mine to see it for herself. And as soon as she started looking around, she found April's suitcase. According to the people who were part of the initial search 1 year earlier, the suitcase and the other items that had been located were not there. And there's really no way to confirm that. If it was in an area that would obviously be searched, okay. But when you look at some of the B-roll footage that we found, it's also possible they just missed it and they just don't want to admit it. I have a hard time believing that this evidence, these items, weren't there all along. But I have to acknowledge the possibility that if the people involved with April's disappearance were aware that a search was conducted at the Red Dog Mine, after that was completed, maybe they decided to move the items there, assuming that because it was already searched, no one would ever go back. To me, that's kind of a leap. Why would you dispose of any incriminating evidence at a location that was on law enforcement's radar? Just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Occam's razor, right? More than likely, this evidence had already been there, and for whatever reason, it was missed. And April's suitcase wasn't the only thing that was located. Gloria also found a red and black flannel jacket she had previously mailed to April, and it looked like it had been burned. And inside the mine shack, Gloria found April's nightgown with a hangman's noose tied around the neck. Nearby, she found duct tape, iodine, and gauze. April's gym bag was beside a burned can, one desert boot was outside a trailer, and the matching boot was across a nearby ravine. Gloria also found April's favorite black lace bra on a ravine as well. Toward the back of the property, Gloria discovered what appeared to be a freshly dug pit. Inside were April's bathing suit bottoms, a skirt, a jacket, and other personal items. And one of the more disturbing discoveries to come out of all of this, according to Gloria, was that someone had actually, quote, used the restroom on these items. Additionally, nearby, a bloody sheet and foam mattress was located as well. And for full disclosure, it appears that there were multiple locations where items were discovered, if everything's factual. Some of it was near the mine shack or in the mine shack, and then it also appears that some items were found in the actual mine shaft. And the mine shaft that I'm referring to would be the Waterman Mine. Now, there's some B-roll out there that I'm playing as I'm talking about this, and this is from the Mojave Underground TV YouTube channel. This is an organization that goes out there, and they have a specialty in going into these mines with certain equipment and searching through the mines for different items, different pieces of evidence. And they teamed up with Gloria. You can see here in the B-roll that it's absolutely incredible what they were able to do. And the bravery and courage that it takes to do something like this, I definitely don't have it. I'm extremely claustrophobic. And if you're looking at the B-roll, if you're watching on YouTube right now, you can see how narrow these caves are. And this is not an amusement park. There's no structure here. At any point, these things could cave in, and yet these people are willing to risk their lives in order to find April. So it's just absolutely incredible and inspiring. Additionally, in this YouTube video, there's a part where after finding multiple items that Gloria believes belongs to April, and the reason she believes it is because April used to cut a V, a small V in the back of her shirts. And in this video, you can actually see her laying out these items, and you can see the small little cut Vs in most of the shirts. So after making this discovery, she calls law enforcement, and they were able to capture all of this on video. I want to play that clip for you now.
Found some clothing, and it's really could be April's stuff, same size, everything. Red panties, bra, definitely April type style. And there's definitely DNA in these panties. What do you want me to do? Call me back. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And so after making that call, detectives did eventually respond to the scene. But according to Gloria, detectives only collected a handful of items, including a large black towel, shorts, and a nightgown. They also swabbed the blood on the mattress, but Gloria said they left numerous other items, including April's gym bag and both desert boots, behind. When Gloria asked why, she said detectives told her they could not collect everything, and what they had was good enough. Now, you know where this is going. You can see, if you're watching on video, that my head has just detached from my neck. The pressure was just too much. I was like a cartoon. I turned red, and then my head just shot up into the air. All kidding aside, embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. You don't leave a single item behind. I don't care if it's a cigarette butt. You collect it. If it looks like it could be involved with what you're trying to investigate, you collect it, you take it, you process it, and you preserve it so that it can be analyzed later, if not analyzed immediately. I don't care what it is. I don't care how many of them there are. Regardless, if there's something at the scene that potentially is connected to your case, you collect it, you place it into evidence, and you analyze it. And if you're not going to analyze it, at least you can preserve it so that later, when a detective who actually knows what they're doing comes along, they can analyze it. I've had cases where we've had 30 pieces of evidence, and after processing 29 of them, we had nothing. But on that 30th piece, that's where we get our break. So think about that in the context of what we're talking about here. What if the piece that they really needed to collect was left behind in that mineshaft? Bottom line, it's inexcusable, and it's an injustice to not only April, but to everyone who cares about her. And on top of that bad news, testing on the clothing items recovered from the mine did not provide investigators with any answers, and it was likely due to the desert sun. And the blood that was found on the mattress was confirmed to be human, but beyond that, no further conclusions could be drawn. Around that same time, Chuck was battling cancer, so detectives interviewed him again, but he continued to deny having any knowledge of what happened to April. He died in 2006. Then 3 years later, in 2009, Dan was also nearing the end of his life. So in a desperate attempt to figure out what happened to April, Gloria went to visit him in the hospital herself in the hopes that he might finally tell her what he knew. Inland Empire magazine reported that Dan provided one piece of information. He said he had taken one of the people connected to a man April helped send to prison out to his mine. But beyond that, he claimed to know nothing else. Dan died later that year, and not long after, one of Dan's acquaintances contacted investigators. She said that one day before Dan died, she found him greatly upset. She asked what was wrong, and Dan said the police had searched the mines for April's body but hadn't found her. Dan then told her, quote, "They didn't go far enough." Based on that statement, investigators returned to the mine areas and conducted multiple additional searches. But despite those renewed efforts, they still found no sign of April. By 2012, 8 years had passed, and by that point, both investigators and Gloria believed that April had been murdered. So she was legally declared deceased, allowing her daughters to access survivor benefits. Publicly, detectives made their thoughts very clear. They believed that April had been murdered and that Chuck and Dan may have been involved. But both men were dead, and that made things difficult. Then in September of 2015, another person connected to April died. That person was Steve Wilkinson, the man April stayed with before going to Chuck's house. Now, it's important to note that on September 1st, 2015, Steve was arrested on charges related to methamphetamine sales, possession while armed, and being a felon in possession of a firearm. He was released on bond, and within days, he was dead. Now, here's the backstory, because it's not what you might think. Steve and three others had boarded a small plane in Barstow with plans to travel to Texas. But after stopping to refuel in Arizona, the plane veered off course and crashed in Silverton, Colorado. Everyone on board was killed, and authorities later determined that the pilot was not licensed to fly that type of aircraft. Now, I have seen the rumors online, and there are people who believe that Steve's quote-unquote accident was somehow tied to April's investigation, and that there may have been people out there who wanted to tie up loose ends, and maybe Steve was one of the last of them. I'm not in that camp. I think this is just an unfortunate set of circumstances from the perspective of this is another person who may have information about April's current whereabouts who's now no longer with us and can no longer assist in the investigation. The actual aircraft accident, I don't think there's something going on here where this guy was set up and there was something tampered with on this aircraft in order to kill Steve. If you really wanted to take him out, there were plenty of opportunities while he was on the ground. And after Steve died, movement in April's case slowed down significantly. There have been very few public updates in recent years, and the media coverage has been very limited. But that does not mean that the case has been forgotten. Someone out there knows what happened to April Pitzer. There's no doubt about it. And both detectives and Gloria have made it clear. They are not going to stop searching until they get those answers. Okay, let's dive into this perspective, and it's going to be on the shorter side because, as I said at the top of this episode, this is the ultimate call to action. Unfortunately, it does appear that April is no longer with us. Not 100%, but it's trending in that direction. What we do know is that she had a lot of enemies, right? She had a lot of people who may have wanted to hurt her. You think about the 32 people that were put in prison, and then you have to expand that because think about all the people connected to those 32 people who were also affected by them going to prison. A lot of people out there, a lot of bad blood. But even if we just dial it into what was going on during the weeks leading up to her disappearance, she was surrounded by a lot of unsavory characters, and some of them probably didn't even know her past. But when you think about drugs, and I've made a career out of narcotics, wherever there are drugs, there's every other crime, from sexual assault to homicide. So you're going to be around a lot of bad people, and sometimes they do bad things for no apparent reason. So we could be looking at an isolated incident where the person responsible for whatever happened to April has no idea who she was and just did this for some crazy reason that at this point we haven't identified. Do I think that's what happened? No. I think law enforcement's pretty spot on here. I think that it became apparent to many people in April's circle that she was responsible for these 32 people going to prison. And one of two things happened here. Either this was retaliation for that incident, or there were people in April's life, people like Chuck, people like Dan, who knew that she was present for some other criminal activity that they were involved in, and they became paranoid that she could flip on them as well. So they had to get rid of her. And whether it was them directly or a combination of people, they decided that April was too much of a risk to let her go back to Arkansas. So they decided to remove her. And I do believe, based on what we've already found, that April, at least at some point, was out in that area, the Barstow area, where she was up in those mines, maybe the Red Dog mine, maybe the Waterman mine, somewhere in that vicinity. And there is also a possibility that once those areas became hot, her body was later moved. I don't know. And based on what Gloria and the rest of the team has already located regarding April's personal items, it's more than likely that she was brought up to this location for at least a certain period of time, and she was either killed there and then disposed of there deeper into the mines and they just didn't find her, or she was killed there and then moved to a secondary location. So where does that leave us now? Well, we do have some evidence. We should have more, but it's better than nothing. And maybe with the advancements in science and technology, specifically DNA, maybe there's a possibility that we can re-examine it with those new techniques and find something that wasn't discovered before. And I'll just start by saying, if there are investigators from April's case watching or listening to this right now, and you believe you have something in that evidence locker that can be re-examined using one of the labs that are out there, and you just need the financial resources, I'm your guy. Get in contact with me. We'll take care of it. On the other hand, if that's not viable, I've said it multiple times in this episode, April was surrounded by some unsavory characters, and a lot of stuff will get spread throughout that community. People talk, and it could be for a variety of reasons. One, it could just be people who don't know how to shut their mouth, and one person tells this person, this person tells another person, and you have a version of a telephone game. On the other hand, it could have been deliberate. Stay with me here. Let's say that Dan, Chuck, and some other players felt that April was a risk, and everyone knew that she was a rat at one point. Is it possible that they decided to make an example out of her, and they deliberately shared with people to let them know, this is what happens when you cross us. This is what happens when you become a risk. I have personally seen multiple instances where drug dealers have sent a message to not only their own people, but to rival gangs, to let them know this is what we're capable of. They want to instill fear to keep compliance. Regardless of the reasoning behind it, it serves a purpose. That means there's more than one person who knows what happened to April. There may be dozens. And each person may not have the entire story, but they have a piece of it. And if we're able to find enough people and gather their information, maybe those multiple pieces will paint a picture. But we need them to come forward. And my words to them are this. At this point, the major players in the game, they're gone. You can come forward anonymously. And even if you think the information you hold is insignificant, let detectives be the judge. I'm hoping that if enough people decide to do the right thing, we can finally get the answers that Gloria and the rest of her family have been looking for so long. So just to recap, 30-year-old April Beth Pitzer disappeared in late June 2004 after telling her mother she was terrified and planning to return home to Arkansas from California. She was last known to be staying with a man known as Uncle Chuck in Newberry Springs, California, and she was never seen again. If you have any information in April's case, please call the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department at 909-387-3690. My final words, as always, go out to the friends and family of April, specifically her mother, Gloria, and her daughters, Kennedy and Bradley. I'm thinking about you guys. As you heard in this episode, I've offered my services and any financial resources needed to make sure we're going through all the existing evidence and processing it with the new latest and greatest science and technology. I know we didn't have positive results before, but sometimes you bring a new lab in and you can have a different outcome. I can't imagine what it's like to sit there and have to accept the fact that more than likely your loved one is no longer with us. But I share the same sentiment as you. Even if that's the case, we don't stop fighting. We need to find April, and we need to find the people responsible for what happened to her. And I hope I get the chance to sit right here and let everyone know that that's exactly what happened. Until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.